We're diving back into the results of our big survey here at NPR News and the APM Research Lab, which was created in the past year here at NPR. Yesterday, we talked about whether you're hopeful or fearful for the future. Today, which institutions do you trust the most? We asked more than 1,600 people across the state about their families and jobs and neighborhoods, a whole host of topics here. It's part of a year-long project called Ground Level, which is an effort to deeply understand the people who make up Minnesota. On the trust question, overall, a lot of trust, but we found some interesting answers and results, especially we're going to dive into two institutions that were on the list, the media and police. Let's focus on those in a minute. But first, an overview from Andy Egbert, who is a senior research assistant here at this research lab here at NPR and APM. Andy, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tom.
This was so interesting. So the question is, how often, when you called up these people on the phone here, how often do you, as a Minnesotan, trust blank to do what is right? Which institutions were we looking at?
Yeah, well, we asked people about seven institutions that, broadly speaking, really shape our public life here. And those institutions were police, the medical system, the public schools, organized religion, the news media, big business, and also state government here in St. Paul.
So what did you find? These are really interesting. Overall, we'll dive into the particulars in a moment, but overall, go for it.
Well, yeah, just a brief bit of explanation about the question. So people could kind of give their level of trust on a scale. And the question was also, how often do you think you can trust whichever institution we asked about to do what is right? And so it's kind of your sense of how often, as a default, you think that this organization or institution is doing what's right. So people could say just about always or most of the time. Those are the two kind of high trust answers. Mm-hmm. And then we also had some of the time or never. So those would be the low trust answers. And what we found across these seven institutions is that it roughly breaks down in like three tiers of trust. So across all of Minnesota, Minnesotans hold the highest trust for police and the medical system. So if we look at those two high trust mm-hmm. answers, it's about three-fourths of everyone we asked said that they trust police or the medical system just about always or most of the time to do what is right. So those two came out the highest. Probably the next tier of trust is a tie between organized religion and public schools. And about 6 in 10 Minnesotans had those high levels of trust. Mm-hmm. As we go down the list, then news media, big business, and state government had the lowest levels of trust.
And it's underwater where the trust is a minority here.
Trust is a minority. So only about 4 in 10 Minnesotans felt like more often than not, they can trust those three institutions to do what is right.
So the police question, we're going to focus on police and media here today in this hour. And I want to hear your thoughts as well. 1-800-242-2828. So within the police, so again, in the overall findings, we're saying of these institutions we surveyed, Minnesotans found the most trust for police, but...
But, yeah, so for all of these questions across the survey, we wanted to go behind the numbers. So are there differences that are meaningful by age or income or where you live in the state? And as we looked at this very high trust overall for police and we broke it down, interestingly, we didn't find that what level of formal education you had mattered at all in terms of the trust that you express. But the real meaningful differences come out in the big divides have to do with where you live and race. And to a lesser extent, we also saw divides by income or politics. So just to start with geography, really this is an issue of Minneapolis-St. Paul residents and everyone else. So the trust that folks in our center cities has is in the minority. Everybody else is 70% or higher, mm-hmm. anywhere else all across the state.
Yeah, and you know, so it's interesting, you break it down here. Southern Minnesota, Central Minnesota, and the suburbs of the Twin Cities all have more than 80% answering that they trust the police. Northern Minnesota, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, all in the 70%. And then just the two cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, at 47%. I think in your business, Andy, that's what we call very statistically significant.
Absolutely. When we see a huge divide like this, and it's rare across the survey where we see kind of one region stand out and every other one kind of running together in a mm-hmm. pack. So there's a deep divide here between residents in the city and everywhere else.
Before we go on to our guests, and I'm going to hold off on the media numbers for now, Andy, because we're going to come back in the second half of the show. I want to ask one question that came up yesterday when we launched the survey, just to get some of this nuts and bolts stuff out there. We asked more than 1,600 people all of these questions about all these topics. We had a question online about whether that's enough people. And in the statistics world, it's called your sample. You had this sample of just over 1,600. Can you address whether that's enough people to get a good sense of whether we're on the nose here with these findings?
Yeah, that's a great question, just to understand how this came to be. We actually talked to 1,654 Minnesotans. We have 8 regions of the state that we break the data down by, and we wanted to talk to at least 200 people in each of those regions so that we could do these comparisons by where people lived. So to look at the sample as a whole, we're at about 1,650, and that creates an overall margin of error of 3.5% on all our findings. Mm-hmm. So that's actually fairly low. Of course, we test all the data, so we're not going to say something that that the data doesn't support.
Yeah.
But that's actually a fairly robust sample. We can say a lot of things, and in fact, we have found a lot of things mm-hmm. that are meaningful in the sample.
And when you said low, you meant the margin of interest, which is this key measurement of how off these numbers could be. I can remember from the one statistics course I took in college, in general, a 1,600-person sample for any survey, in my memory, that's a pretty large sample. Is that right?
Yes, we can say an awful lot with 1,600 people. A lot of polls have a lot fewer than that.
Mm-hmm.
So that margin of error, yeah, that's not anything we did wrong. When we
right.
say error, that just is kind of baked into
yeah.
any survey. And we just have to, there's a little bit of blurriness around the figures, and we take that into account.
It is worth the correspondence course in statistics to learn the math behind why that is so. Because again, people say, well, we have 5 million people living in the state. What are you going to get from 1,600? But I was convinced in the class I took, it absolutely can tell you stuff.
Yeah, it's really elegant math. You don't have to, you know, as you get over 1,000, really quickly those margins of error shrink. So.
To that end, one of your colleagues at the research lab here, Cassie Absar, has been looking through on this survey what are called long-form answers. You're basically given the open mic there, Cassie. And when we talk about, we'll talk about police first. What are some themes? You know, this is not just checking a box, yes, no, agree, disagree. This is write out your answers. What do you think? What are some general themes we saw on these police-related questions when police came up in these answers?
Right. I mean, it goes along with what Andy was saying in terms of the geographic divide. A lot of the answers do come from the central cities. I'm going to go ahead and read some quotes here
sure.
that are pretty poignant and thought-provoking. You know, we have people from the central cities saying, let's stop shooting people, not having cops shoot people. We have problems with the police and how they treat African-American men. We have other people from even Rochester saying, we need to change the police system. We have a really interesting quote from someone in the central city and saying we need to improve the relationships between the police and the citizens. And this is, you know, a key demographic, I think, you know, a millennial, as we would say, 31-year-old female here in the central cities. So it does corroborate a lot of the data we have, what people are saying and what they are thinking, what's on their minds. Goes along with this question of trust.
And to the opposite finding,
yes.
with especially with Greater Minnesota, the open comments were, I presume, then very supportive of the police.
We do. We have, you know, someone here from Greater Minnesota who is saying we need to have more respect for the police. We need treatment of the police to be better. You know, some of them are a little bit more neutral in terms of just we need to give police officers, we need to have more police officers on the streets. And it's not necessarily saying they're wrong or they're you know, good, but we just need more of them.
More of them. We're going to be checking in with Cassie throughout the hour, too, and Andy will be weighing in. But that's the question, as it appeared on the survey, that I want to put to you. Generally speaking, how much of the time do you think you can trust, and we'll start with police, to do what is right. We'll talk about media a little later, but we're going to start with police. So give me a call with your thoughts now. 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. And please don't call or text if you're driving. We have a couple guests who we gave this data to. We gave these data to ahead of time, and they've been chewing over it as well, and they're with me in studio. Ruben Rosario is a columnist for the Pioneer Press here in St. Paul, has written a lot about police, policing, and community interactions with police. Ruben, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
John Hinderacher is president of the Center of the American Experiment, a conservative think tank in Minneapolis. John, thanks for welcome back to the show. It's good to see you again.
Well, thank you. It's good to see you.
I'll start with you, John. Just some initial thoughts. I mean, what I really want to, as you looked at these data and saw the places on police, on the police question, where there are these differences, the question I want to bring to the two of you is why? Why is this happening? Why are there these gaps when you look at these numbers?
Well, I think the first thing that should be said, Tom, is that the overall trust number in Minnesota for police is extraordinarily high. The overall number is 76%. That is very, very high. Mm-hmm. It compares, if you look at the Gallup survey that came out last June, not exactly the same question, but very close. Mm-hmm. Gallup found nationally trust in police at 57% as opposed to our 76%. And part of what's going on there, at least, is that Minnesotans tend to have a lot of trust. If you look at our trust level in institutions and you compare Minnesota to the rest of the country, what you find is that Minnesota tends to be a high trust environment. We have more trust in our police, but we have also more trust in other institutions. So I think that the top line takeaway for me is that the overall level of support for and trust in the police here in Minnesota at 76% is just extraordinarily high.
Ruben, what would you add? What did you take away from looking at these numbers?
Basically, if you ran this poll, conducted this poll in any state where you gauge respondents who live in rural areas or suburban areas or the central cities, you're probably going to get about a similar breakdown in percentage.
And there are, Andy, in some of the reporting we've done, other entities, very trusted entities like Pew. I think Ruben is spot on, right? If we did this in Wisconsin or in Illinois, you know, you might find these similar kinds of answers.
Yes, I would say those same geographic broad strokes hold.
Right. What is it that is it simply? And this is kind of a white man's question. Why is it more prominent now than it would have been 5 years ago because it's more in the news, because of these interactions with police are more in the news? Or would the African-American community, for example, have always answered this way because it's always been happening?
I think, again, the results probably would be very similar. Yeah. I think what you find in terms of the trust level, it's the high trust level people have in the police. Outside the central cities in Minnesota, I think a lot of it has to do with the pushback of all the protests, of the rise of Black Lives Matter. You see signs in places where there's very low crime rate, support the police.
Yeah.
You know, in places on my block, there's one that my neighbor has. There's only been two cops that have come into my block, because I live in the suburbs, in the past 10 years. One of them was to play basketball with my son. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they still have that sign, support the police. So I think it's more of a backlash, a pushback, too, in that trust level.
Do you agree with that, John? It's that the support you see, especially in the non-cities areas of the state, is as much a backlash as anything?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I think if you go back through the years, you'll find a high level of support for and trust in the police nationally, going back a long way. You know, traditionally, the number one institution in terms of trust is the military. Gallup found that again this year. And second to the military is the police. There's no question that the level of trust in police varies with the kinds of encounters people have with the police. And certainly, if you live in the inner city, you are more likely to have encounters with police officers, your friends and relatives more likely to have encounters with police officers. And if some of those encounters are negative, that's probably going to affect your perception. So I don't think there's anything very surprising in those findings.
We're talking about these data about from this survey by NPR News and the APM Research Lab. A lot of this information on nprnews.org/ground level. That's the name of this overall project you're going to hear a lot about. We're talking first about police, your trust. This is you, Minnesota, your trust in police, according to the survey. We'll be talking about the media in a few moments, too. I'm sure you don't have any opinions on that at all. But I'd love to hear your thoughts first about police. We will then move to the media. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828-651-227-6000. Cassie, do we have more responses, especially on this police question? Again, these are just the open-ended responses people gave in the survey. Just whatever comes to your mind, whatever you type out on the keyboard, what are people saying?
So we do have, a white non-Hispanic female from Rochester who's in her 60s. And what she really wants, again, as I stated earlier, was more respect for the police. That's a pretty common theme for people who do seem to trust the police, is that idea of trust.
Again, Andy, there are differences by age. I'm seeing people over 55. We're in the home stretch of having 90% trust. People who are millennials, 18 to 34, 67%.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems to be the cut point there. 55 and older, that trust sales really high. Similar to the share of Republicans who said that very, very high, stands out across the whole survey. And I think police do make sacrifices and they are deserving of trust. And a lot of people are reflecting that. But in the under 55 group, then we see that the trust levels do fall. And it is lowest among our youngest adults in the survey. So it's still in the majority, but it falls to about two-thirds.
There's another piece of statistics stuff we should point out. As our guests, Ruben and John, have pointed out, Andy, there are findings here not surprising. But it's important to do, it's important to ask the question, right? It's important to say we did this survey that found this. And it's important to say, hey, we're confirming, even to Ruben's point, if we're confirming everything you'd see in every other state, it's important to ask the question. So no wasted space here, I think, in this aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to just go on hunches. We wouldn't be in a job very long. So it's good to see if the data bear out what we see. Sometimes what we see is very much a product of the people we associate with or our neighborhood. And so when we do a survey that's representative of the whole state, we get that bird's eye view. And it helps us to get inside the minds of our neighbors and people who might not be our neighbors and say, you know what, maybe my opinions are not broadly shared.
So how do you translate this then, Ruben? And I'll ask both of you. Ruben, I'll start with you. Ruben Rosario from the Pioneer Press. Again, another big divide is by political party. Republicans are 88% trustful of police. Democrats, 67%. A vast disparity there. Then we go to the Capitol. Or we go to a city council meeting. Then we go to these conversations where policy is being had. Maybe we're talking about body cameras one day. Maybe we're talking about use of force the next, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like these survey results explain where the head butting happens in those halls where the decisions are made.
Right, exactly. We've had debate over body cameras, how they're going to be used. The videos, how public are they going to be, how private they're going to be, and that cuts across political lines, too. Some people that are more protective of privacy rights don't want these videos to go out willy-nilly out in the public airways,
yeah.
And others, they're more protective of, public airing,
yeah.
to be more transparent in our police department, want to see as much as they can in these videos, and that cuts across political lines. Sometimes.
Did you see anything in what we shared with you when we gave you these numbers, Ruben, that suggests, yes, there's these gaps, but actually I can see an avenue where we could find agreement? Any thoughts on that?
I think even if you talk to, I've talked to the police union heads of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, and they're both actually pro body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might think that's surprising, but they don't, because they believe that their police departments, the police officers on the street, 99% of the time, 99.9% are going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So that is something that I've even found common ground along political lines. I think people do realize that these bicameras are valuable regardless of how you look at it.
You know, John, Cassie, what would you add there?
I was just going to say, you know, talking about whether having a body camera is a mandate or not, we do have someone who came up in the survey that said mandatory body cameras for police all of the time. I don't think there should be an option. And this person does identify as an independent. Mm-hmm. So
that's interesting, yeah. John. I mean, Ruben and Cassie have identified one issue, one policy piece that we could hunker down on and presumably find some agreement on, the body cameras. This survey, though, talks about more of a gestalt, right? Like when I walk into the Capitol, do I come feeling a trust for police? How do we break through those gaps when again, maybe there will be this policy or that policy where we agree and can find and pass a bill or something, or when we meet with police or do this the public hearing, we can find the common ground. But that overall feeling, how does that change?
Well, I'm not sure it ever will. Republicans stereotypically are probably more pro-law and order than Democrats. That's been true for decades. I think the survey is probably bearing that out. What I would say optimistically, Tom, is that body cameras are an example of an issue where even though you may start with a little bit different set of presuppositions coming in, nevertheless, you can look at the issue and you can analyze it and come to a very strong agreement. I think on body cameras, the real issues there are logistical. In principle, I think people on pretty much all sides would like to see them in universal use, but implementing that isn't quite so simple.
We're talking about the results of the survey. Our work here, by the way, doesn't end with this survey. You can help steer the coverage. So tell us about your community by going to nprnews.org ground level. You can see the results that we're talking about here today, which have to do with trusts in institutions. Again, we looked at police, medical system, religion, public schools, news media, big business, and state government as the institutions. Do you trust them? The police had the most trust of all of those institutions overall. But we're diving into these numbers, for example, that find white Minnesotans who were surveyed, 79% are on the side of saying they trust the police. In black Minnesota, 41%. People of color in the middle there between the two, splitting the difference at 62%. Andy, what would you add there?
Yeah, so, you know, we do see that huge divide by white and black Minnesotans in their trust levels, about 40 points. But, you know, we also looked at the data by income and by race, and we see that higher income Minnesotans have more trust of police. It's not as big a gap. It's about 10, 12 points over if we look at households earning less than 100,000 and more than 100,000. Higher income households have greater trust, but there's also a racial dimension to that. So if we just isolate white Minnesotans of lower incomes have less trust.
Mm.
So these things kind of play out in different ways. It's not solely a racial divide or an income divide. It cuts across different parts of our community.
That's so interesting, Ruben.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of geography of where you live.
Mm-hmm.
It's a combination of class also. Somebody who lives in, let's say, St. Paul's East Side, which may have a higher crime rate than somebody who lives in Kenwood or Apple Valley, you're going to have different experiences.
And to that end, on the income side, if you're white, you can't afford to live in Kenwood, but you do live on the East Side.
That's
so
right.
The same scenario is playing out necessarily.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones here. We're taking your calls. Again, we're talking about police, your trust in the police here, as it was asked here on this survey, 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Brian in St. Paul. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, just speaking to the geographic disparities, I think not only the differences in perceptions in the areas, I think that's also impacted by the cultures and attitudes of the officers and resources available in those areas, how they do their jobs. And also, I'm pretty pro-law enforcement. My dad's a police officer. I've had dozens of positive interactions with law enforcement. I did have one negative interaction, and that just totally changed my perception. So I think while most of the time the officers do the right thing, that just not doing the right thing one time can make a more difference in these other institutions because of their all the power and authority they have and their ability to take away personal liberties. So we really need to be able to trust them to do the right thing all the time. And so when something happens wrong once, it's really magnified and it's a big deal.
Brian, thanks so much. Ruben was nodding as you said. Is this a scenario where just the one time can ruin it?
Well, that's human nature. You know, I can have 10 positive emails. Is that one negative one that I get that I keep thinking
Are
about?
Are you saying you've gotten negative emails,
yeah, I got
Ruben?
One, just one. But it can color your perception. But when you live in the central city, you're going to be dealing with encounters with police more often than you would in a suburban area. And it's the type of encounter, too, that's different. Mm-hmm. For example, if I'm one of those family that's making $100,000 or more, I'm driving an Audi, probably registered and so, and very nice. I get my car repaired. But if you're driving on the east side with a beat-up Guzzler, because that's what you can afford,
right,
and there's a broken tail out, guess who's going to get stopped?
Yeah.
You know, and then who's going to get fined? And do I have enough money to pay, put four on the table, or am I going to pay this fine?
So right. And that gets to the societal issues,
exactly,
of how expensive it is to be poor,
exactly,
which you've written about as well. John, what would you add to that, especially this idea, especially, and I'm going to broaden it out actually for a moment to all the institutions. If we have a lower rating of state government or news media or police, wherever we have that, is it because of that one time, right? That one time it didn't go well. Does that color the experience?
Well, it certainly can. But, I think the caller made a great point. I think there is a difference. I think that when you get stopped by a police officer, that is a tense encounter.
It is.
In a way, going to the doctor, well, that can be tense, But I think the caller's right. I think there is something about those encounters with police officers where you have 10 that are satisfactory, that are positive, but then you have one bad one. I think that maybe does impact you more than if it's just looking at what's happening in state government in St. Paul or something of that sort.
Andy, is there any way from the APM Research Lab perspective to measure for that? Is there any way, and maybe it wasn't in this survey, to say, I have this viewpoint about this institution and it's informed by the one time it was negative? Is there any way to measure that?
Well, I'm sure there is. We haven't done it yet,
but
we'd certainly like to pursue that. But I think John makes a really excellent point that there's something unique about kind of the power dynamic in those encounters with police that we don't see, for example, with the medical system. I mean, certainly
The doctor does have all the power, right?
Yes, but I think, not in a way that they, it could end so badly for you.
It's not the same. The doctor doesn't pull you over with a gun at his side.
Yes.
Right.
It really isn't the same.
It is a different point.
Although when you do look at the open ends, when the people's responses for the medical system, and if they think we're on the right track or the wrong track, I mean, the vast majority of people who say we're doing the right thing on the right track for medical care are saying it based off of their personal experience.
Yeah.
And so, you're reading when people say we're on the wrong track, it's because, I had to wait in a long line, they paid me too much. Mm. And so personal experience is very powerful. I mean, it's the world around us and that's how that's the lens with which we view the world a lot of the times.
There's probably an interesting component to that, Ruben, and we're gonna move to news media in a moment about when something goes wrong. If you're at a doctor's office and you get bad news that you have a health issue, and you have this in your life and you've written about this, Ruben, you don't necessarily hold that against the doctor. In fact, you're probably appreciative. But if you're encountering the police and it says, I'm going to give you a ticket, and I, as the driver, say, I think that's bogus, you shouldn't be giving me that ticket,
right,
then you get the bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, I think the power dynamics is a lot different. They're on a different level.
Yeah.
With the cops, you pull you over, then it's more of a, they have the ability to suspend your civil liberties. I mean, the doctor doesn't,
Know. Is there here's a question, Andy, and just say I don't know, and then we can follow up on this. It's an interesting question. Is there a correlation between how much you dislike the police and the likelihood you have committed a crime? Did we measure that in this survey?
We did not in the survey, and we didn't ask people point blank about that.
Yeah.
I just want to circle back real quickly to Cassie's comment about the medical system, though, because when we look at these trust questions together, it tells us something, too, about kind of how groups hang together or don't. And it's not necessarily the fact that we see geographic and racial divides across the whole survey. And that's one area I just want to call out. If we look at Minnesotans of all races, they are uniformly giving high trust marks to the medical system. So it's almost identical. It's almost 72% all across the line. And I think it's just important to know that we have achieved a more similar appreciation, kind of a default stance in terms of how we regard mm-hmm. one institution. And so it can be done. I'm here to say that.
Let me take one more call on police, and then we're going to move to the news media. So Rosemary on the east side of St. Paul, you get the last word on this conversation about police. Go right ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say I am white. I am very well educated. I'm nearly 70. And so I don't fit most of the things, but because I live on the east side, I see examples of just terrible things that go on. And just one example of that is that last winter, a Hmong man driving home from work got hit by another car. He called, and a cop car actually went by at some point, but never stopped. It was 2 hours before they came to investigate this. He could have been hurt badly. He needed a bathroom. I gave it to him to use. He had his relatives come and bring him something to eat because he was really hungry. He was cold. I mean, that time lag is just inexplicable to me.
Rosemary, thanks so much for the call. It goes to your comment earlier, Ruben, about just that one time. And there you go. It's an interesting perspective. We're talking to Ruben Rosario, who writes for the Pioneer Press here in St. Paul, John Hinderacher from the Center of the American Experiment, Andy Egbert and Cassie Absar here from our own research lab here in-house, because we're talking about this big survey, all these results online, nprnews.org/groundlevel. So for the rest of this hour, Andy, let's dive into the other institution I wanted to focus on, news media. And wow, 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 these numbers are very different. Overview, what are we talking about here?
Yes, well, they're not very flattering numbers in terms of overall trust for media. So we looked at one of the highest regarded institutions first with police, and now we're going to look at one of the lowest regarded institutions. And it's important perhaps to remind people that we asked folks for each one of these, we said in Minnesota. So this is supposed to be a state-level look. So we're not talking about federal policies. This is what you think about the news media in your state, and that includes TV, radio, and newspapers. We did say that in the question. So just to remind folks, overall trust, the two higher levels of trust were just north of 40% for news media. So
underwater. More people distrust than trust.
Absolutely. More people distrust the media in general than do trust it. And, you know, even among folks who have kind of higher trust, as we kind of break those numbers down, it doesn't get very high. So we see that some areas of the state have a little bit higher trust in media. Women hold a little bit higher trust than men. We also see that there's a little bit of a political gap there where Democrats hold higher trust than Republicans.
It's not a little.
Not a little. Gap, no, Andy. Actually, we should explore that. That's a yawning gap.
It's a yawning gap. Democrats, 61%. Democrats, people who identify themselves as Democrats, 61% trust the news media. Republicans, 22%.
Yes.
That's a 40-point spread. It's almost impossible to have a bigger difference,
yes.
I think, Andy, statistically
speaking. Those are some of the biggest gaps we saw across the whole survey. And it's important to say that, you know, if we were to chalk certain things up to researchers' regrets, we wish we could have probed a little more in this question.
Uh-huh.
Because I think, unlike police, this is such a diverse landscape mm-hmm. of media outlets, right? So, you know, we didn't ask people which outlets they did find more credible or less credible. That would have been a great thing to know, certainly,
yeah.
And it would have given us a few more insights. But nonetheless, we still see just kind of a general stance of very, very low trust kind of as a starting point.
Well, Ruben, you're part of the problem.
Well, you know what? My feeling is there's all fake news.
Oh, well, come on now.
Not surprising. Actually, I was trying to see in the survey where we stood, if we were higher than used car salesmen or snake oil salesmen or below it, because I don't see them.
We didn't ask that on the survey.
I'm kind of curious, though. You mentioned about how they feel about news media in Minnesota. I get the feeling that they probably drew in the kitchen sink of the national news media, what the news media they think is the news media.
What they consume in Minnesota.
Is that true?
Right. Because my feeling is if they were to be asked, well, how about your community newspaper? I think they'll have a different opinion.
And actually, I think we're going to hear more of that in our Dan Crocker, my colleague here from NPR News. He's going to have a story that dives a little bit into that. He went up to Crow Wing County and talked about it. That's this afternoon. Cassie, to this point about we were hoping it would be kind of Minnesota-centric, but I think, in, especially in those open answers, you're going to get a lot of those national outlets and websites included in the answers as well.
Right. And I think, I mean, what I'm going to read is a little different, because what I've been able to do is look at people who approve of Trump, who said they approve of Trump, and those who disapprove of Trump, and see how do they feel about the news media. And so there is a gap also between people who support Trump and people who disapprove of him. That was a question we asked with Trump supporters, saying 22% of them saying they trust the news media, while disapprovers were at 57%.
Yeah, so another yawning gap.
Very similar to the political party. And so, for example, we have right here a white male in his mid-40s from the 7-county region of the Twin Cities who say that he approves of Trump, but he disapproves of the media because he disapproves of how they only bring up the negative. They are never bringing up the positive. He has done well. So there you go. There's an example of...
John, get in here. Your thoughts on these media numbers.
Well, here again, Tom, what we're seeing is not at all surprising. We're seeing low trust numbers in Minnesota for the news media, but they're still higher than for the nation as a whole. If you look at the latest Gallup survey, Gallup nationally finds just 27% trust in newspapers and 24% trust in TV news.
Ooh, so we're double that.
Yeah. So here again,
but we're still below 50. That's right. Incredible, John.
Exactly. So here again, Minnesotans tend to have higher trust in institutions than the average American. But relatively speaking, news media continue to rank near the bottom.
So in our last 15 minutes, get in on this conversation. I know you have thoughts about the news media. 1-800-242-2828-651-227-6000 online at nprnews.org, but you can tweet me also at WeberTom1. John, and again, this is John Hinderacher from the Center of the American Experiment. There was this very fascinating geographical difference that was pointed out as well. The Rochester area and Minneapolis-St. Paul, the two cities, both were just barely above in approving and trusting the media, 51%. Then you had the Duluth area, southern Minnesota, the Twin Cities suburbs, and central Minnesota. I'm going down the list. The place where there's the yawning gap, in the last survey about police, central, southern, and northern Minnesota as regions were about the same. But here, even among the regions, northern Minnesota is way down, 31%. I'm trying to get a sense of why that is, that even compared, not compared to Minneapolis and St. Paul, but even compared to central Minnesota and southern Minnesota, that even compared to that, you would find a difference with northern Minnesota.
I could offer maybe a couple of theories. One possibility is that people in northern Minnesota believe that mining has not been reported on fairly. Now, that's one thing that could distinguish them from rural people and
a very important local issue.
A very important local
issue. And how
it's
reported.
Yeah, that, I'm guessing that might make some difference. The other thing is that a part of what's going on here when you see people expressing disdain for the news media is that they don't feel that the news media represent them or speak for them. They don't think that reporters and editors and so forth are like them or are sympathetic to their lifestyles. And I think that's part of the reason why we see in greater Minnesota very low levels of trust in the news media, whereas in the urban areas, trust tends to be higher. I think there's a pervasive feeling in rural America, and particularly, of course, here in rural Minnesota, that a lot of these institutions, I think this is part of what the Trump effect was all about. Mm-hmm. A lot of these institutions, including news media, simply don't speak for or represent rural and small town people.
Ruben?
Yeah, the mainstream media has been a scapegoat for or a whipping post for, not now, it's been many years now.
Right.
And it's not so much the mainstream media, because it's actually the why we'll call the left-stream media. That's the perception, corporate establishment, liberal, bias. And then you throw in what is the definition of news media.
Yeah.
Is it the Washington Post? Is it the Daily Caller? Is it Rachel Maddow? Is it Sean Hannity? I think it's all been thrown in.
Right. Do you have, can you add to that there, Cassie, with some of the responses we got on the survey? Actually, while you're looking, I'll read this tweet here from Fred. Does NPR stand for Minnesota Progressive Radio? They are very biased. The other one I've heard is, does NPR stand for National Palestine Radio for its coverage on Israel and the Palestinian conflict? We're not going to get into that at all here today. But to that end here, it's an interesting question, John, about when we think writ large about institutions. And I've always wondered this about the perception and belief of a liberal bias in the media. Is it rooted in the fact that the media report on institutions and I think do probably start from the standpoint of institutions are there to serve the people and to do right by people? And so if you have people who don't actually believe that, who actually want to blow up the institutions and say, no, they're not even relevant in my life, then if you're reporting on the institutions, you'll be seen as liberal. A, did you follow what I said? I kind of talked myself into a circle. And B, is there any validity to what I was positing there?
I followed what you said. I don't think I agree with it. I think the perception of liberal bias in the news media is rooted in the fact that it's true. Countless studies have been done of political contributions by reporters and editors, of looking at news stories and evaluating as objectively as you can, is this a positive or a negative or a neutral news story? And you'll see numbers like, you know, stories about President Trump on network television, you know, 3% positive, 97% negative. I mean, you know, it's a reality. You look at the White House press corps. You know, I have a website that became rather famous because we played a role in 2004 in exposing the fact that 60 Minutes promulgated fake documents. This was an early example of fake
news.
Was
this the George W. Bush National Guard
story?
Yeah,
the Rathergate story. Promulgated fake documents to try to give a boost to John Kerry's presidential campaign. So, you know, I think the news media have a problem. I think that while it's not 100%, I certainly could point to exceptions. The perception that the news media in general tilt to the left is true.
You want to get in there, Ruben?
I think it's the low trust factor is also intertwined with our political divide in this country, the polarization politically, and that has also manifested itself into the news, how people perceive the news media. Mm-hmm. That's also permeated into entertainment. How many shows will you have there pro-cops out there? You know, we got,
there's the show Cops.
Cops,
starter.
We got the Cops. yeah. You got like 10, 12 that show Cops in a great or positive light. Within those shows, mm-hmm. how do they perceive or portray the news media? Usually vultures, usually somebody snooping around, or somebody screws up their investigation, which in my experience of 37 years of journalism, most of the people I know that are journalists are well-meaning. And we are trained not to be cheerleaders or lapdogs. We're trained to be watchdogs. And people don't like that. So shoot the messenger. Here I am. You know what I mean?
Cassie, thoughts there?
Yeah.
On our open-ended answers?
So there is, you know, there's an interesting quote that goes to what John was saying earlier. Excuse me. He is taking on the media, he being Trump, which is biased and left-winged in order to do his job. And what comes out a lot in these open ends is this idea of a fight. Right, between the news media and the president. And so this idea that, you know, the media is picking on Trump or he's picking on the media. And so I think that way of looking at the news media is really shaping how people are the way they're trusting the news.
Andy?
Yeah, I would just add, if people aren't familiar, we did ask people at the time of the survey, which was late August through mid-September, whether they approved of the president's actions. And so we have this group then of Trump mm-hmm. approvers and disapprovers. And sometimes those map fairly closely to Republicans and Democrats in the survey, but certainly not always. Mm-hmm. But on this question of news media trust, the folks who are strongly approving of Trump hold very, very low trust of the media. And just want to call that out. It's roughly 20%.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's also interesting on just to what you noted there, Andy, this was a survey done in August and September. And yes, the survey does include what we referred to as approval numbers, like Trump's approval. I think we did Mark Dayton as the governor and other entities. We're not actually highlighting that too much because so much has changed. So yes, this survey says X percent of people in Minnesota approve of Trump, but it's so dated at this point. We wanted to branch out into the more broad impressions, because I'm sure the exact daily tracking of Trump approval would be so much different by now.
Yeah, I mean, these things have moved with different events in the news stream here. These things move up and down approval levels. For us as researchers, though, it's a basic poll just tells you overall approval numbers. And we don't really know about among those who approve or disapprove, how do they feel about other things? And where, for example, do Trump approvers and Republicans writ large, where do they start to divide? Because those groups don't map exactly onto one another. So that's where the survey offers maybe some unique insights that aren't particularly dated.
The point isn't to say he has this much approval. It's to say we now have this group of people we know who approve of him, and we now know how they feel about all these other things. That's a huge, important thing.
Yes, that we haven't seen anywhere else. And they are, you know, our friends and neighbors. And so that helps us understand our state better.
Well, speaking of friends and neighbors, let's spend the last few minutes here taking some calls. A lot of people want to have their say on this as well. Laura in Eden Prairie, what would you add to this? Thanks so much for calling.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I so often hear that argument that the media skews progressive, and I think it probably does, but I think it is the nature of journalism. And the people that go into it tend to be people who question institutions, and those people will tend to be more progressive. And I would say, on the other hand, people who lead institutions tend to be more conservative. It's kind of the nature of what your interest is and what you tend to have faith in.
Laura, thanks so much for the thoughts there. I appreciate it. Let's go right away now to Mark, who's in Bemidji. Hi, Mark. What are your thoughts here today?
Well, good morning. Thank you for my call. Yes, I guess I'm one of the 20%ers who disapprove of the media.
No, you're in the majority if you disapprove of the media, Mark. You have a big party that you're a part of there.
Right. Well, I think partly the shift has occurred. Instead of reporting, you know, this is a news story, so often they inject their opinion. This is what I think about this or that. You know, and they slant it towards, you know, the worst characterization. For example, the video, I'll just use the one when President Trump was in Japan feeding the fish, right?
Yeah.
You know, instead of focusing on, they both did exactly the same thing, they showed the one where he dumps it all in.
Exactly.
Well, they both did it. So
no,
why can't they just, you know what I mean, why can't you just show the film and show a clip and say this is what happened, but no, there's that slant. So I guess it's examples like that skew me. I consume different news sources, but it just seems to me there's been a shift over the years of reporting the news to being an opinion maker and an editorializing instead of just saying, here, you guys make your own.
Mark, thanks so much, John. He cites a perfect example of the media absolutely eating crow, because it was the image of Trump and the Japanese prime minister feeding these fish out of this box, you know, a couple pellets. I don't know what the heck they were feeding, but, you know, a few at a time.
Yeah.
And then the image you see is Trump, almost like kind of an oaf, just dumping it like he had no idea what he was doing. Oh, I'm just gonna dump it
in. CNN, among others, put that out and scoffed at Trump.
And
isn't Trump an idiot?
Rewind the tape. It was the Japanese prime minister who had done it first.
Exactly.
He said, let's dump it in.
Exactly. But they didn't show that. There's two things going on there. One, that's editing video in a misleading way to make President Trump look bad and then comment on it to reinforce the idea, oh, yeah, isn't he dumb? But the second thing is, Trump was having a very successful Asian tour. He was having important discussions with world leaders. You know, Japan right now is under the threat of nuclear missiles from North Korea. This is important stuff. And are the news media covering the substantive discussions that Trump is having with the Prime Minister of Japan? No, they're ridiculing him for dumping out a box of fish food. And so it's no wonder that people who don't share that political perspective think this is just very poor reporting.
Makes me wonder, Ruben, if that goes along the same lines as we had talked about with police. If you have the one bad experience or the one example you can point to, and this is absolutely an example where the media in the first reading of it was wrong. I mean, I think there's pretty universal agreement we got that wrong in the way we showed those photos. But that if you can point to the one thing, you're done.
It's true, and I'm not going to, you know, defend here the fish.
No.
But we have another video.
Think about the fish. No, I know what you're saying.
But we have another video a few weeks ago when Trump was throwing paper towels at audience of hurricane-stricken victims in Puerto Rico, where the reaction was a lot different.
It was.
And symbolic.
That hits close to home for you, too,
that hit close to home to me, and I understood the perception of the people when they saw that. You know, let them eat cake kind of thing. And I wouldn't call the Asian trip successful when he comes back or during the time people criticizing him for taking Putin at his word while he spent 3 or 4 years disbelieving that Barack Obama was born in Hawaii and had a birth certificate. So,
yeah, and those happened after the fish thing, just for a clarification. The world is divided now between before the fish thing.
Oh, he didn't bring up the human rights violations of the leader in the Philippines.
The Philippine,
dealing with drug dealers there.
Exactly. You know, so. Let's take a couple more calls in our last few minutes here. Stephen in Minneapolis. Hi, Stephen. What do you want to know here today?
Yeah, hi. I think that maybe we're asking the wrong question, and regarding trusting the media, because I think that this lack of trust in the media has gotten so much worse since the Trump campaign started. Maybe the question we should be asking Americans is, do they trust Trump? And those that do believe what he's been saying since day one of his campaign, which is that the news is fake.
I see.
It's
like a pass through. If you trust Trump, therefore I will trust.
Yeah, because I think people did trust CNN 5, 6, 7 years ago, and that now they don't, and that's because Trump has told them not to.
So Andy did. It's actually a great food for thought, because one of the things Andy will say is that she's looking for ideas on the next survey. Did we get into the way he worded it in this survey?
Well, we can't say with absolute certainty, but what we can see is where certain characteristics kind of hang together in the survey, and we absolutely see people who are more conservative or Republican or more likely to approve Trump, all of those things hang together with low trust of media. And that's a lot of what we're seeing, too, in those geographic differences. We pulled together for the regions of the survey, we pulled together what were the vote tallies in the 2016 election.
Compared them to who actually
Absolutely.
Voted.
Absolutely. So we got the actual data from the Secretary of State's office. And those places where we have lower trust in media geographically, what we're seeing is that there's a more conservative bent there. So the majority of votes went to President Trump. So I think a lot of what we're seeing, you could say there's a geographic difference, but is it really just picking up? Really, the greatest divide, perhaps, is the political kind of perception.
It'll be interesting if we can hone that with the next survey.
Absolutely.
It's a really interesting point. Final minute, literally minute here, John and Ruben, final thoughts on what we're talking about here today, overall institutions and trust. John, you first.
Well, these are very interesting data, and I really commend NPR for doing the survey, for putting this together, for having this, very interesting discussion about it. There's a lot of things you could say, but one thing I would take away is that one of the things that make Minnesota a successful state is the high level of trust compared to people in general that we have in institutions. And that is across the board in all of our institutions, as you measured here in the survey. And I would hate to see us lose that. One thing I would like to see some focus on going forward is, why is it that Minnesotans tend to believe more in their institutions, and how can we keep that?
Ruben, final thoughts, 10 seconds.
Somebody like me, somebody who doesn't trust anybody, including myself, I'm impressed with this survey. I like this state. That's why I live in it.
Ruben Rosario, John Hinderacher, Andy Egbert, and Cassie Absar. Thanks so much.